Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Ron Paul Liberty Report. Today, we do the program called Mythbusters, and co-host is Chris Rossini. And Chris, I understand we might answer a few questions and discuss the Federal Reserve.
Yes, good morning, Dr. Paul. The Federal Reserve, that unconstitutional institution that creates money out of thin air, naturally, with that kind of power, there's going to be a lot of interests that are going to want to get close so that they can benefit from the printing press. So we're going to talk about those interests, and we'll start with the big banks and the crony corporations. So if you could talk about how the banks and big corporations benefit from the Fed.
Yes, and I think the biggest myth dealing with the Fed is that so many economists and people have come to understand that if you have more money, you're wealthier. But that is a myth, because the more you print money, the more you dilute the wealth and the more you disturb wealth creation. So the Fed is up to a lot of mischief. Yes, the Fed, of course, was started in 1913. The people who really pushed on it, and they did it in secret at Jekyll Island, were the big banks. They were very much involved. Of course, big corporations are very close to the big banks. And they wanted to get somebody who was called the lender of last resort, because they were gamblers, basically. You know, they loan out money that they don't really have. They were engaged in fractional reserve banking, which they still are, which causes a lot of danger in the economy. But if you have somebody there that will massively create credit, which QE was all about, because there was such a big burst of a huge bubble, you know, a few years ago, this is what the banks and the corporations wanted. It doesn't work perfectly, because some of them go bankrupt because it's such a friable system, but they do salvage, you know, a bit of the banks and the large corporation, but they don't salvage the wealth and the distortion that goes to the middle class and the poor, because in the crunch that we had 8 years ago, poor lost their jobs, they lost their mortgages, and they lost their houses, and they basically didn't get a bailout. But a lot of people are saying, well, we're doing pretty good now, aren't we? Yeah, but there's still a lot of people suffering out there, and it's not the way to build growth long term. And so they're back up to the same mischief of creating money out of thin air. But the banks like the idea of the bailouts and the lender of last resort. They like the principle of fractional reserve. Big corporations and banks like the system because they get the money created by the Fed, the monetary base, first. And therefore, it has more value than after it circulates through the economy. And when that happens, the value of the money goes down, prices go up. So the people who suffer the most are the ones who have their cost of living going up and are living on the margin. And that is why it's so devastating, why there are middle class and poor revolts against this type of system. And they're pretty sophisticated in patching it up and keeping it together, but they can't do it all the time. And that's why we've seen so many problems since the Federal Reserve was created. You know, financing of wars, having depressions, having NASDAQ bubbles and housing bubbles burst, and precarious conditions exist, has everything to do with a monetary system designed by those who benefit the most, the large international corporations as well as the banks. And eventually, it is my prediction that this will have to be changed. We will have to have monetary reform. And not just tinkering on the edges. When I talk about reform, I mean, you just can't keep printing paper money at will to subsidize those who like deficits. And this is also supported by a Keynesian philosophy that teaches so many people that are in Washington at the Fed that deficits don't matter, paper is wealth, and all these things, and good management of the money supply, you know, will take care of all these events. So this is naive, and I think we're still facing a lot of problems, but it definitely was started and continues to benefit the large corporations, the corporatists, as well as the banks, because they get immediate benefits, and they can pass along the injury to the others. And that is what's so devastating about it, is it does undermine the middle class. Matter of fact, Mises always predicted, he says, if you continue to do this and have a Keynesian type of economic system, you will wipe out the middle class. And that's not going to happen tomorrow. But the middle class, in spite of the booming stock market, is not exactly robust. You know, there's a lot of people employed, but the jobs are not real good jobs, and their standard of living is down. They don't own houses. There's a large number who still live with their parents. So there's a lot of problems out there, even though superficially you might argue, oh, no, things are okay. We just have to make an adjustment in the management, and this will all straighten out. I don't happen to believe that, so I think we'll look to the day when we have a closer look at the Federal Reserve and figure out what we should do with it.
Yes, you mentioned that the Fed was created in 1913, and that's a very interesting time because it was only a few short years before that the U.S. decided to go abroad and start conquering nations, and it was 1914 and 1917 that the World War I. So, and we've been at war ever since. So please talk about how the Fed and the warfare state are interconnected.
Yeah, they love it and they need it because there is a saying that all wars are never paid for through direct taxation. The people never, either they don't have the money or they don't have the enthusiasm and they're not going to write a check to the government. The government may sell bonds and borrow money and print money and or steal money from another country, something like that. But the people, don't like to support the war, so they have to have a system like the Federal Reserve. And we've been in a lot more wars in the 20th century. The first one was World War I, and there was a lot of inflation there. The correction for that inflation was 1921, a very, very serious depression. But it was short because at that time, the Federal Reserve and the government would still adhere to a more of a hands-off, you know, let it correct itself and then go back to printing the money. But that doesn't happen anymore because by the 30s, when that happened, the tremendous monetary inflation of the 20s, the depression comes, and that's when Hoover and Roosevelt said, oh, we can't let the people suffer. So what they did, they devised a system of intervention of bailing out everybody. And guess what? The depression wasn't like 1921, it lasted until the end of World War II, and it and of course the inflation came back and it financed World War II as well. So the other reason that people like the inflation way of paying for war, the costs are a bit hidden, they're delayed, and people don't realize that the price inflation and the correction in the economy is related to, you know, maybe the financing of the war 10 years before. So it's a sneaky way of paying for things, and it's, of course, very, very devastating. But the Fed was created in 1913. It was a progressive era. We had the income tax and the Federal Reserve and the foreign policy change. It went, especially from Teddy Roosevelt onto World War I, Woodrow Wilson. And that's the way they financed it. So inflation and a monetary printing press money like that is devastating. The warmongers like it. And they support it, and they couldn't do it. They'd be very restrained if they didn't have this. And the neocons, who are really the current warmongers, and they've been around for a long time, they didn't always have the word neocon attached to them, but the neocons like it, and they are very dependent on inflation because they can run these wars, which they think they're doing all this good. Every once in a while, you'll run into a neocon that probably is sincere in thinking that he's going to make the world a better place, but he's totally blinded because these wars, we have the economic consequence of printing the money, and then we have the economic consequence and the attack on our civil liberties that is a consequence of this. So they're kidding themselves if they think they can justify the wars that are promoted and financed through the Federal Reserve.
Yes, so the Federal Reserve finances the military empire, but the U.S. empire is not just guns, it's guns and butter. Now, in the United States, we're close to half the population that receives some form of federal assistance money. Please talk about how the welfare state is financed by the Federal Reserve as well.
I probably would give more people credit for being well-intentioned on taking care of the poor and not letting anybody fall through the cracks. I think they're totally economically ignorant, and they don't understand that this sense of goodwill is actually how you create this welfareism, because if you subsidize something, you get more of it. And that's what's been happening. So they want to help the poor. But when you get the inflation from the printing of the money by the Fed, because governments don't have the money in the bank, they run up debt, and the Federal Reserve prints the money, that is passed on to the poor, so they pay more than their fair share. It isn't the big corporations and the banks that pay for this. It's the poor themselves. And right now we have, I think it's 660,000 people living in housing, overnight housing, you know, in shelters. And so this whole thing about we have a wonderful system that we've created by this, but it's always done by printing more money. But the motivation to pay for welfare is a strong motivation, and this is probably one area where we would disagree with the progressives, because progressives generally agree with us on protecting civil liberties and staying out of war. But on this, they have a soft spot in their heart and their bleeding hearts, and they believe they're doing the very best. But the truth is, history has shown, if you study it carefully, that the more money that you take out of an economy and the more distortion you have and the more borrowing and more inflation, the more poor people you have. And I sincerely believe the Austrian school prediction that if you keep this process going, instead of really bailing out the poor, I think you destroy the middle class with a financial crisis, especially a monetary crisis.
Yes, finally, Dr. Paul, those are the big ones, but now we're going to cast a wider net and try to get the other ones in here, and that's politicians, government employees. There's now millions of them in the United States, government university professors. They all benefit from the Federal Reserve, and they keep a tight lip when it comes to even talking about it. Please discuss that.
Yes, this is probably the biggest problem with it, because it's intellectually endorsed. I think Keynes and Paul Samuelson and Paul Krugman, they do a great deal of damage because they give people cover. So when the member of Congress comes, and the only thing he's ever studied has been liberal economic policy and Paul Samuelson and Keynesianism, they say, well, this is what you're supposed to do. Why do those conservatives and libertarians worry about deficits? That's not a problem. So they get conditioned on that, and they're true Keynesian, and they believe in paper money. And so it's a philosophic thing. It's an ideology thing, and that has to be addressed. But it also means that a lot of people find an excuse to join in and benefit from this, because a lot of people do benefit from that. Military industrial complex benefits, the people with low interest rates, the housing market. There's a lot of people who benefit, but the politicians need it because they get reelected by spending money. You go home to your district and say, I did this and I did this. Of course, he voted for all that, and there was no money in the bank, and the Fed monetizes the debt, further disturbing the market. So the politician loves the Fed. They get along fine. And yet, when I was in Congress and on the banking committee, there was always the argument from the Federal Reserve chairman, oh, well, you're right about this, worrying about this and spending and interest rates, but it's all the Congress's fault because they spend too much money. But the Federal Reserve, if they decided they wanted to do something, I mean, they have the tools to quit monetizing the debt, interest rates would go up and Congress would be blamed for the problem. But that isn't the case. They're really buddies. It's part of a system. But, you know, the other thing that I think goes on there, because people in Washington, that would be members of Congress, that would be staff people on the banking committee, all these people, they do this because they want to understand the system from a practical viewpoint, because probably 70% of them end up being lobbyists. So they want to know how the system works and how you lobby us. I keep thinking that it's a training ground for these people. So the other big thing is the economic system has been hijacked by the Federal Reserve. They control the economic organizations. and they hire a lot of economic professors. So they have the organization, the journals that are controlled, and you have to publish a certain way. And then if you want to get a grant and you want to deal with the Federal Reserve, you have to write a certain philosophy. Nobody in the university, you know, dissects and criticizes the Federal Reserve. So they have control of this. It starts off intellectually. Then you have these pseudo-intellectuals that build on this and use this to support the Federal Reserve. The basic thing is this is very, very intrusive and very, very dangerous. And I've worked on this for a long time. And right now, the big thing is we're continuing to make the effort. We're working very hard on audit the Fed. And Rand, Senator Rand Paul, he's energetic. He wants it done. He's gotten some votes in the Senate. And this is what needs to be done. All this stuff exposed. But all you need to do is listen to Janet Yellen. She gets hysterical over that, especially on foreign transactions, because that's where all the hanky-panks going on, all the people getting bailed out. And right now, we have to keep working to get the audit and find out what's going on and propose a system. But quite frankly, it'll self-destruct. There's been fiat money, that's just money out of thin air, around for thousands of years, and it always fails. We've had it in this century many times already, or in the 20th century, and so that will eventually come. But right now, you know, they're going to tinker run and prop it up, but eventually, because the momentum is there, the whole principle of capital has changed. Capital, instead of being what is left over after you worked and produced something, after your spending, what's left over is capital. You reinvest or loan it out to somebody. That isn't where our capital comes from. We don't save, really. And the capital, so-called capital, comes from the Fed. They create the capital. They send it to the bank, and that's where the gross distortions come. So this is an important issue, but there's a lot, as we've just talked about, there's a lot of individuals and a lot of groups that benefit from it. And the one group that benefits the least will be the middle class and especially the poor. And if we could get that message out, I think we could get more people on our side, because so often the progressives and the liberals, they win the argument that we who believe in the free market and sound money, that, oh, we just don't care about the poor. Well, if they cared or knew what to do about it, why are there so many of them? And they haven't improved it. And their system has failed. So we're going to have the opportunity. That's why the more the merrier. That is, the more people who understand this and understand the Federal Reserve, the better off we'll be when the big crunch comes. But I want to thank everybody for being with us today. And Chris, thank you for being with us on MythBusters.
Thank you, Dr. Paul.
And to our viewers, I want to thank you for coming in regularly to our program. And I thank you very much today for tuning in. And please come back soon.